I'm Lucy Thomas.
And I'm Olivia Shortall. And welcome to The Breakdown,
news and analysis on government austerity cuts.
Today, we will be discussing how government cuts have affected the South Coast.
We'll be speaking to politicians and public service workers to see how government cuts have impacted public transport, policing and healthcare, as well as an analysis of yesterday's budget.
We'll be talking to Conservative Councillor Peter Finney,
Senior Officer for the Royal College of Nursing, Julie Connolly, NHS Nurse, Jenny Ayres, and Chair of West Dorset Labour Party, Barry Thompson.
Stay tuned for the next half an hour to find out how the government cuts are affecting your area.
The implementation of austerity in 2010 has heavily impacted public spending in the South West. First, we'll be discussing an issue that will affect many rural communities in Dorset.
Last month, Dorset County Council agreed to drop 27 rural bus routes in order to slash £500,000 from the rural bus budget. We're here with Conservative Councillor Peter Finney to discuss his views on this cut. Under the new scheme, nearly 100 villages and settlements will be without a bus service. Do you think that this is going to be a problem?
Well, clearly, it's not an action that Dorset County Council will wish to take. We're forced into the action by the government reduction in funding, which is most unfortunate, really. However, you have to say to yourself, our current rural bus service is not fit for purpose. It doesn't really serve the number of communities that it should do, and it costs a disproportionate amount of money in order to subsidise a private company and keep those bus routes running. Sometimes you see buses with only 10 people on. I have to say that I do sympathise with people who have got used to the existing service, but we do have some surprisingly good options.
So what kind of options...
Sorry.
Oh, no, it's fine. I was just wondering, what kind of options are there available for the public then?
Well, there are a lot of options, but they're all dependent on how people work together and how they change their views on ordering buses and transportation. Rather than meeting the 9:30 bus, which is always there all the time, a more flexible approach using community transport is the way that we want to look at things. Now, there is a great deal of toing and froing across the county by county council transport, by hospital transport, by neighbour care and various other schemes. And what we want to do is to coordinate those views so that the local people can pick up on whatever the transportation needs are for their area. Now, a large part of rural Dorset doesn't have a bus service, including my own village where I live in Holt. We don't have a bus service at all. So in order to get some form of transportation to people, we would like to see some community transport put in place that will give people options.
Thank you. So how have the public, do you feel, responded to the cut of the bus service? Do you feel like they're going to be able to act a bit more flexible in terms of the options that you suggested?
Well, there are two views, really. I mean, initially people are up in arms about the thought of losing their bus service. But when we go out and talk to them and we put on a roadshow and give them the options and say what's going on and how they can help themselves, it does require them to change their views. Rather than going to meet a bus that's always there, they may well have to discuss when they want to go on the bus so that they can go to the destination that they want to go.
Okay, well, thank you, Peter, very much for your call. We hope that you have a good afternoon. Thank you for coming on air.
You're more than welcome.
So in terms of what Peter said, I think it's pretty obvious that it's not the be-all and end-all for the bus services in the local area. It seems that there are alternatives and people can take an alternative approach.
Yeah, I feel the same way, but maybe for older generation it might be more difficult for them as they do rely on certain times to catch the bus.
Yeah, I feel like this is something that Peter perhaps did not pick up on. Maybe it would have a major impact on them, I suppose, because they're obviously heavily reliant on this kind of transportation, I suppose.
Yeah, as an older generation they're not able to drive around as much, so they do rely on this kind of transport.
Yeah, I suppose the cuts are definitely, they make them more vulnerable to this sort of scenario, I suppose.
Yeah, and as we picked up on in research, there's no buses to the Moors Valley Country Park, which potentially could affect the business there. So, not many people would be able to travel to so many places to visit.
Yeah, and I suppose because these sort of areas, obviously, people visit for leisure, I suppose seasonally, it could affect the local community and companies.
Yeah, it could create quite a big issue for people and public rural areas. So not be able to get to their towns and areas where they'd like to go.
Yeah, I agree. Now, obviously, Peter, he spoke about different options that people have. So hopefully that people will have the flexibility in order to adapt to these sort of scenarios so that they can continue using the bus service. So what do you think about that? Do you think people are going to be flexible enough?
I think people do, but the main issue is that they've obviously gotten used to going on the bus at a certain time, like you were saying, at 9:30. You know, people know the times of the buses.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so now we're going to move on to the budget.
In yesterday's budget, George Osborne spoke about his plans regarding the security of Britain's finances over the next 4 years. He focused on securing state pensions, the money being pumped into the NHS, and welfare measures.
We choose to put the next generation first. We choose, as Conservatives should always choose, sound public finances to deliver security. On welfare, last week, my right honourable friend, the Secretary of State for Work and Pensions, set out changes that will ensure that within the rising disability budget, support is better targeted at those who need it most. Let me confirm that this means the disability budget will still rise by more than £1 billion and will be spending more in real terms supporting disabled people than at any point under the last Labour government. We're also going to keep public sector pensions sustainable. We reformed them in the last Parliament, which will save over £400 billion in the long term. To ensure those pensions remain sustainable, we've carried out the regular revaluation of the discount rate, and the public sector employer contributions will rise as a result. This will not affect anyone's pension and will be affordable within spending plans that are benefiting from the fiscal windfall of lower inflation. While the independent statistics confirm that under this Prime Minister, child poverty is down, pensioner poverty is down, inequality is down, and the gender pay gap has never been smaller.
To comment on the budget, we've got the chair of West Dorset Labour Party, Barry Thompson, on the phone.
Hello.
Hi, Barry.
Hello there.
Hi, Barry. So, following the budget yesterday, do you think the reforms on welfare and pensions are fair?
No, definitely not. Some of the people on the PIP, disability allowances, are going to lose £30 a week, some £150 a week. And I don't see as cutting corporation tax, capital gains tax, and the allowance for middle earners is fair. I think it's totally dishonest.
So, as a member of the Labour Party then, is there anything you would have done differently?
Well, I wouldn't have done the disability cuts. I think that's disgraceful. And I do welcome the upgrading of the allowance to 11,500. I think that's very good. And that will help lower paid people.
So how do you think people feel about the disability cuts?
I think people are annoyed. Even some Tory MPs are annoyed. I think it's disgusting.
Do you feel like this is a way of the government, they're obviously not representing the minority groups?
Yes, I do, yes. I think their budget has been aimed towards the upper earners again, and they've given them tax cuts, and I don't think it's fair.
So what would you personally do differently then?
What would I personally have done differently? This is my own personal view, not a Labour Party view, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. We'd like to hear what you think.
Yes, I would have altered the national insurance contributions, put the limit up for that, paying those, which would have helped the lower paid.
So why is that then?
Well, because if you put the limit on national insurance up, people were paying less, and it affects the lower paid more fairly.
So I suppose you're all for helping the people with lower income backgrounds. You feel that they haven't been, they've been poorly represented in the budget then?
Yes, I do, yes. The other thing what I'm very annoyed about and is the settlement for the councils from the local, from the central government, which have been cut drastically. And, well, we know that in Dorset County Council, there's 500,000 cuts to the rural bus services.
Yes. Yeah, we've picked up on that earlier, actually.
Yes, and a million cuts from the youth services. And I find this is incredible that they are cutting so much. And they seem to be shifting the emphasis from taxation to council tax. And the local people are taking the brunt of it. My council tax has gone up 3.5%.
So what do you feel like the impact of the cuts to the bus services have been?
Well, in Dorset, all the services which run one or two times a week, which usually connect with market days, have been axed. So it's going to hit the local economies of the market towns.
We spoke to a member who was representing the transport service, and he said despite the cuts, there are going to be other options for the public to use, so it perhaps might not be as bad as we think.
No, I do know that, and I'm hoping something can come out good out of this, but it's still a big blow. The other worrying thing, and I've written this down, is local governments, their support grant from the main governments being phased out to 2020 and is going to be replaced by the local authorities keeping the business rates. Well, the business rates have been cut enormously, so in future, more and more of the local government is going to fall on council taxpayers.
All right, thank you for the call, Barry.
Yes.
Going to have to go now, but I hope you have a very, very good day.
Right, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
And now for Facts and 50.
This week we're focusing on NHS cuts and their effect on patients and staff.
25.7% of chemists may have to shut this year in the UK.
There have been funding cuts of around £990 million to GPs.
518 GP surgeries have closed or merged under the Tory government.
16% of A&Es in the UK have closed since 2010.
A third of NHS walk-in centres have been shut down or degraded, releasing up to 2 million patients back into the struggling A&E system.
The average patient waits around 1 week longer for treatment after referral under the Tory government.
3.2 million patients are currently on NHS waiting lists, awaiting treatment. This year's figures are the highest in at least 6 years.
A&E performance is at its worst in 11 years.
And 78% of nurses report increased stress levels in the last year.
There are 21,000 less people working in the NHS since 2010.
These facts and figures were published by this year by the Mail Online and Greenbenches UK.
The healthcare sector has been greatly impacted by austerity cuts, with public health services currently facing a reduction of millions of pounds.
Last year, the government announced it would be cutting £200 million from its grant to local authorities that allowed them to provide such services as sexual health education, help to quit smoking, and school nursing.
Public Health Dorset is facing a £2 million cut, and Hampshire a £3 million one.
The Royal College of Nursing spoke out opposing the cuts, signing a letter to the Chancellor calling for the measures to be dropped. And now we are going on to the police cut section of this programme. Since the last wave of cuts in October 2015, there have been many discussions around Dorset Police. They receive more than 200 emergency calls each day and 700 non-emergency calls. They are already badly funded by central government, giving them less money per person than anywhere else in the country. However, cuts have been made and more are supposed to come in the future. Dorset Police provided no comment on the cuts, so our reporter Nina is here to tell us more.
Hi Nina. So, how high have the cuts been so far, and can we expect more to come?
Well, more than £20 million have been cut from Dorset Police budgets since 2009, and another £10 million of cuts are to come, leaving officers to deal with 21st century crime with resources from the 1980s.
So, what is the result of these drastic cuts?
Nearly 300 police officer jobs have gone, despite a rising population and new challenges. That is 19% fewer officers than 7 years ago. The cuts have affected many different factions of Dorset Police. The police marine section, for example, has lost half its full-time officers. Streets in Dorset are less safe, as the number of specialist officers to police our roads has been cut by 25%. Even police dogs suffer from the cuts, as there are now just 13 police dog handlers left for the whole of the county. And to top it all off, 6 police stations in the community had to shut down due to insufficient funding.
So what can we expect if further cuts will be made?
If further deep cuts will be made, they're going to change policing in Dorset as we know it. Neighbourhood policing, which is a great support in the community, will disappear completely. The public are used to being able to speak to police officer, whether that be on the street, at a public meeting, or at a police station. But as a result of their cuts and the reduction of officers on circulation, the safer neighbourhood officer and the public cannot have that interaction that they used to have.
So how will this affect the relationship between the police and the public?
Well, the softer side of policing is disappearing to keep the core function of 999 emergency response going. But it's the soft side of policing that's key to the community. However, it's not only everyday contact with police officers that will be lost. There will also be a major impact on crime prevention and proactive policing.
Will the removal of this area of policing impact crime statistics?
Effective patrols and targeted policing is the reason crime has gone down. If you start to remove those things, it won't be long before crime rates start to rise again throughout the country. Fewer officers also means an increase in response times. Those left on duty will have to prioritize incidents requiring immediate actions, with response time for other incidents stretching to hours, if not days.
Is there any way in which this issue can be solved?
Well, the only solution to the problem is to try to restore policing back to an interactive community service that they should have, according to the Dorset Police Federation. If they don't have that interaction with the public, they could lose a vital piece of information that may help them to solve a major crime. That's why the Dorset Police Federation joined the Cuts Have Consequences campaign, so the public becomes aware of just what they've lost already, and more importantly, what they may lose in the future.
Thank you for your time, Nina. Thanks for coming in.
Next, we are joined by Jenny Ayres, nursing student at Southampton University and mother of Jacob Bishop, who has a disability. As you've previously told Best, your son has autism and cerebral palsy. As a mother, how have disability cuts affected both of your lives?
Well, as far as I know at the moment, it's not going to affect Jacob yet because he still claims, because he's under 16, he still claims disability living allowance and not the PIP. However, I have noticed that next year when I claim for him again, the money's not actually rising, his disability living allowance. This will be the first year where it stayed exactly the same.
Okay, so what will the impact be when he turns 18 then?
When he turns 18, so he will literally have to claim PIP, which is going to be difficult for him because obviously the threshold for claimants is being raised all the time at the moment. And as far as I can work out with his disabilities, he's not actually going to qualify very easy for the payments.
Okay, so in yesterday's budget, it was announced that £1.3 billion of extra cuts will come from the PIP given to those with disabilities. So how do you personally feel about this?
Angry, because I too have a registered disability, but I cannot claim PIP because I don't meet what the government say are the levels to be able to get any money from them. And unfortunately, looking through yesterday's announcement, if it stays the same or gets worse, when Jacob gets to 18, he will lose all of his money as well because he's on the lower end of the spectrum for both his cerebral palsy and his autism.
So again, do you think the current government haven't really had the public's interest best at heart, in particular like minority groups like, I suppose, yourself and your son fall under?
I can say, with my hand on my heart, that in the last parliament and in this parliament, those that are in minority groups have been severely let down by the Conservative government because they seem to be penalising those people and just making more money for the rich.
So as a nurse yourself, how do you feel like this is going to impact you on your day-to-day like working life?
Well, I can see it already without even what was announced in the budget yesterday. The stress on nurses is just increasing. You've obviously got all the issues with the junior doctors on at the moment, which we as nurses fully support because we are in technically the same boat. But when they go out on strike and things, we pick up the workload. When they're off stressed because they're working far too many hours, the nurses pick up the workload. And unfortunately, that then means that you're having more nurses on sick leave, long-term sick leave as well, and there is nobody to fill the void.
So how is the general feel about the workplace? Is the morale quite low in terms of nurses?
I would say morale is at rock bottom. Even in sort of the wards that I work in, where we're a very close team and we're more, you know, friends than just colleagues, it is at rock bottom because we are being expected to do more for the same pay. And, you know, this year we're only getting a 1% pay rise again, which works out on my pay grade only £400. And when my gas and electricity and my council tax is going up and all my bills are going up, you do just feel, why am I in the career I'm in? But it's more than a career, it's something that is just inbuilt in people. You don't choose to be a nurse, nursing chooses you. And, you know, at the moment, it's very hard decisions nurses are having to make about whether they continue with their careers.
Yeah, so I see that you've picked up on like the difficulties that nurses themselves are having, and obviously how you said that like nurses, their priority is obviously to care for their patients. So in terms of the patient, how are they going to be impacted by these cuts?
Unfortunately, and as much as I hate to say it, because of the profession I'm in, I do see more patients dying from these cuts. It seems very clear that the Conservative government are trying to run the NHS into the ground so that they can start privatising it. And that means that there is going to be a knock-on effect for the patients. They are not going to be able to receive the care that they deserve and require. And yeah, I do feel that more patients are going to die unnecessarily.
Yeah, it's such a shame that it seems to have come this far, especially with the nurses themselves who feel like they're in this profession because they care. And it seems like the job themselves is making it much harder for them. Thank you for coming on air today. I hope you have a lovely day.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so we've now got Julie Connolly on the phone, Senior Officer for the Royal College of Nursing in the South West.
Hello, Julie.
Hello, good afternoon.
Hi, Julie. So in terms of the cuts themselves, what do you see, like the forecast for nursing, give or take about 5 years?
Well, things are not looking good for nursing in 5 years' time. As your previous caller has just said, you know, a 1% pay rise this year is not going to make up for the losses, which amount to at least 14% pay cut in real terms for nurses since 2012, whereas the cost of living has gone up by 22%.
So nurses
are leaving and joining agencies because they can earn more money.
So do you see the NHS heading towards a privatisation? Do you feel that's where the nurses seem to be leaving? Do you feel more nurses are going to head towards like private firms?
I don't necessarily think that there is a direct correlation with the current situation and privatisation of the NHS. In terms of joining private firms, I think terms and conditions in many independent organisations that provide healthcare are not necessarily comparable, but agencies, albeit that they are private businesses, yes, in terms of that, yes, they are joining agencies either as a second job or as their only job, they're leaving because they would have less responsibility working as an agency nurse, more flexibility as to when they work and the hours that they work, and are paid considerably better, albeit that there is now obviously a cap on what agencies can charge NHS hospitals, but you're still seeing our NHS in the southwest using agencies because they need to make sure patients are safe. They need to make sure that patients don't die, and so they are doing their utmost to make sure that they do have adequate nursing staff on wards and in community teams.
So how do you feel? How do you think that patients really, really feel about these cuts in the southwest?
Well, when you talk to patients, whether they're in hospital or just generally members of the public who have had encounters visiting in hospitals, they can see how busy the nurses are. They can see that they're run off their feet and how tired they get. And, you know, they're very sympathetic to the fact that they know it's not nurses' fault, that they're not able to do the job that they want to do and provide the standard of care that they really want to provide.
So in terms of the stress that's been put upon the nurses in this country, do you feel that there is perhaps an option of having, well, being forced to employ foreign nurses perhaps from other countries in order to keep up with the, well, what's required of the NHS on the number of patients that we have in the UK?
Well, certainly most of our trusts in the southwest and across England are still doing overseas recruitment, whether it's in Europe or whether it's outside Europe, such as the Philippines or India. They're having to do that to try and fill posts because they can't fill posts at the moment. We've had a year-on-year until this year cut in the number of student nurse places, and it takes, you know, 3 years to train a student nurse. So therefore, albeit that the numbers have gone up slightly this last year in terms of training places, it's going to take a while. And at the other end of the scale, you asked me originally about 5 years' time, the demographics of nurses mean that there's an awful lot of nurses who are going to retire in the next 5 years. So you're not only losing numbers, you're losing that experience.
Okay, so what impact are the recent public health cuts going to have on local authorities in the southwest?
Well, it's very short-sighted and it's a false economy because there's always going to be a knock-on effect when public health services and social services budgets are cut. And it's going to lead to, an enormous impact on the health service. For example, outside of Dorset, last year in Cornwall, they were talking about the 1.6 million cut that they were going to have to their budget. And there was a suggestion that the knock-on effect could be £1 million to the NHS because preventative health means that we keep people healthy longer, they stay out of hospital, they're able to live independent lives. And if that's not there, if the education's not there, if the services to improve people's health are not there, then clearly they're going to use NHS services more. So it will have a severe impact.
So you talk about the fact that we're going to be losing a lot of nurses to retirement. So in terms of nurses starting off, do you feel that less people will be inclined to study nursing?
Well, less people are inclined to study nursing because they see in the media the pressure that nurses are under. And at the moment, we're fighting a battle to save student nurse bursaries. We've had a very big campaign over the last few months and lobbied government around saving student bursaries. We have over 1,200 stories of students who say they would not have been able to do their nurse training if they had not had the option of a bursary. So okay. That in itself is going to have an impact.
Thank you, Julie. That's actually all we have time for today, but thank you for the phone call, and I hope you have a lovely day.
So that concludes our show for today. Thank you, everyone, for listening to The Breakdown.
We hope that we could give you an informative overview on how government cuts have affected the South Coast.
I'm Olivia Shortall.
And I'm Lucy Thomas, and we wish you an enjoyable afternoon.